Our speaker today is Joseph Ridenour. Joseph is an Army medic veteran, Avon High School teacher, esports coach, and Marquee Who's Who honoree. He's devoted to the earth, his students, his daughter, and practices Buddhism, Druidry, elements of Christianity, and his own flavor of paganism. He values silence, books, and feasts with friends. He has been a Unitarian Universalist for several years now and deeply values the community and challenges of democracy at work.
I'm laughing because I didn't realize that was going to be read. And I was like, oh no, I hate being the center of attention. This is awful. Like that, I mean. Sure, I know how to use that. All right. Am I red? That's worse than giving a sermon. Oh my God. Okay. Hello. Typically, I'm Joseph. Right now, I'm Dalfa. Okay. As we discussed, I practice a Frankenstein mix of Druidry, Buddhism, Christianity, and my own unique variety of nature-centered paganism. Please don't feel pressured to agree with me or take me seriously. I would much prefer that you investigate and interpret my meaning and message from behind your own unique lens. Push and pull until you find meaning that suits you. Please take a moment with me, if you wish to center ourselves before we continue. Let your eyes close and take a deep, slow breath. Continue breathing. Don't hold your breath. And visualize the following with me. Imagine the silvery strength and fortitude of the trees, roots, and soil rising into your body through your feet, all the way up to the crown of your head. Imagine the golden brilliance and clarity of the sun falling upon you from the crown of your head, and it should also fill you up all the way down to the soles of your feet. Even in this cold weather, the sun is still there, keeping us alive and well. Thank you. Please return. Let's talk about Samhain. I recently read a DC comic book called The Sandman. It revolves around the god, more or less, of dreams. It's fantastical, dark, and delightful. And there's an interpretation of a legend of myth in that comic book that I just adore, death. Generally speaking, in our U.S. American popular media and culture, our interpretation of death is of a hooded figure with a scythe, and it originates in a figure that comes to gather the dead in his cart and truck them to the next life. Along the way, he weighs your choices and decides what variety of afterlife you're going to enjoy. This is largely based on the ancient Breton figure, Anku, one of the many variations of the Grim Reaper. That said, there are as many interpretations of death as there are cultures, now and through the past. DC Comics' interpretation of U.S. American death is of a pale punk woman, clothed in stylish black tank top, jeans, and boots. She has perfectly drawn cat eyes and an Ankh amulet on her chest. She is kind, calm, balanced, compassionate, and inevitable. Crucially, she is a charmer. There's an excellent scene where Dream is feeding pigeons and Death walks up to check in on him. As they talk, a young man misses a kick, and a soccer ball bops Dream on the head. The young man grabs up his ball and sees Death and naturally, immediately hits on her, asking her for her number. She laughs knowingly and says something to the tune of, "No, thank you, Sean. Enjoy your time, your game. We'll talk soon." He's confused. "How do you know my name?" She laughs and shoos him away, and he goes on his way, confused. As you can predict, he is soon struck and killed by a truck, by a car. She returns to him and walks him over to his body. They have a conversation, and he moves on to the sound of wings. There are more scenes, one with a newborn, another with a middle-aged man in pain on his deathbed, and more besides. But without fail, she treats them with compassion and respects their intellect. Gone is the apathy that we are taught that death lives in and exhibits. She has a stake in this, and she has a discussion despite her inevitability. This is a delightful interpretation. There's one problem, though, one strange detail that kept me up at night for a while. The ankh round her neck. Ankhs represent life and the perpetuation of life. Make that make sense. Death, wearing an ankh. I'm still not completely certain of its relevance, and uncertainty is crucial to religious debate, in all fairness, but I know this. Death is inevitable. No matter her temperament and her kindness, she was coming. There was no escape, and there is no escape, and no debate. And that makes life so much more valuable. I recently visited my family home in West Virginia and walked a winding path that crosses at an intersection with a train tunnel. It lays unused and mostly empty. Several working railmen died there in a cave-in in the 70s, and it's been shunned by the locals ever since. Their bodies are still there. I wonder if they're lonely. I don't even know their names. But I decided to visit and have lunch with them. I even lit a small fire for their old cold bones and to deter any bad spirits that might be wandering about. I played some of my favorite Hank Williams. I hope they liked it. I maybe should have played Merle Haggard, but what are you going to do? They didn't sit with me that I'm aware of, but I hope they enjoyed a moment of company. Spirits crave life. Some of them crave the company of the living. Some crave the senses of the living. Some think they're awfully funny. And some are just plain old mean. Some we welcome into our home, and some we forbid, with good reason. Enter Halloween, All Hallows Eve, or my preference, Samhain. Samhain is the OG Celtic holiday, where folk huddled around bonfires and feasted and warded off bad spirits that were up to mischief. All Hallows' Eve is the Christianized version of Samhain, and Halloween is the commercialized version of all of the above. Samhain lies upon the moment in the year when the veil between our physical world and the spirit world is thin, the thinnest it's going to be all year. This can be a problem, or a boon, or both, depending on your beliefs. If you believe, as I do, in wood sprites, fairies, devils, river spirits, wisps, murderers, and Sasquatch, and how irritating they can be, then you're in the Samhain camp. I'm kidding about Sasquatch. If you believe in venerating the saints, then you're in the All Hallows Eve camp. If you like buying $6 Dracula costumes and scaring children, you're in the Halloween camp. Conveniently, there's no hard line here, and many generations of people have celebrated this time of year in similar ways. I personally have a shrine, much like the one many Mexican folks prepare for Dia de los Muertos, to attract my ancestors, my friends, and the good dead folk all around us. I also leave out a meal for them. I also light a bonfire to ward off those bothersome fey folk. Lastly, I wear a mask to protect my identity and scare off those spirits that I don't want attached to me. Crucially, I spend time with the living and take in all the sights, sounds, and smells of life. I meditate and experience my most beloved memories with my lost ones. I discuss Jesus with my Grandpa Joe again. I look up and watch Grandma Karen talk on her favorite couch. I sneak a look at Trell and Addison while they color and laugh together. I watch Olivia sleep peacefully. I feast, I laugh, and I cry. I hug my daughter tight, tight, tight. I thank my mother and I give my dogs some proper treats. I check in on my friends. I enjoy the best and worst that life has to offer because I still can. That is the value and duality of Samhain. The rituals you enjoy and partake in only matter as much as the love, pain, and fears of daily life. Samhain is all about the push and pull of mortality and our veneration of memory. Without memory and community, we are little to nothing, stranded and filled with dread. This is the time of year for you to let down your barriers to the present and the future, to embrace the living. Call that person you're scared to call. This is the time of year for you to let go of your past, of your fears, to forgive, to release your pain. This is the delight of Samhain, to live fully and without regret while you still can. Recently, I've been anxious about my faulty memory. Statistically, with stress and depression comes memory loss. Additionally, I wanted to be a gentler father, more approachable, even though I'm the disciplined parent. I tend to be quiet, which can be good and bad. My solution I found in a lovely little book about fatherhood that I read recently. I journal. Whenever I have a joyful, painful, emotional thought about Luna, I journal. I talk to her and explain what happened. I tell her how I feel, and it gives me a chance to be introspective, to chew on my thoughts and feelings and act accordingly. More than that, my biggest fear is that I will die, and Luna will not know how I feel about her. When she's 18, I'll give her the collection of journals, and perhaps she'll have lunch with me too, in whatever tunnel I get myself stuck in. My point is that yesterday is too late. We have this moment, right now. Use it wisely and regret nothing. That is Samhain. I'll leave you with a poem by, you guessed it, Thich Nhat Hanh, my favorite poet, Oneness. The moment I die, I will try to come back to you as quickly as possible. I promise it will not take long. Isn't it true? I am already with you as I die each moment. I come back to you in every moment. Just look, feel my presence. If you want to cry, please cry. And know, I will cry with you. The tears you shed will heal us both. Your tears are mine. The earth I tread this morning transcends history. Spring and winter are both present in the moment. The young leaf and the dead leaf are really one. My feet touch deathlessness, and my feet are yours. Walk with me now. Let us enter the dimension of oneness and see the cherry tree blossom in winter. Why should we talk about death? I don't need to die. Thank you. Blessed be. There's my input that you didn't ask for.
We do have time for some discussion. Does it?
That guy.
I had acute pancreatitis in 2013, and I was in the hospital for 6 weeks, ICU for 10 days. It was quite an ordeal. But the love that I got from mostly folks in this church and family and other friends was just amazing. There was all these cards and flowers in my room, and the nurse noticed that, and she said, "Wow, somebody's loved." And I hadn't thought about that, but that's how it felt for sure. And everybody was very concerned after I got out of the hospital for the third time. You know, they wanted to check in and see how I was doing. And one day I was at the dentist. I was in the dentist chair, and the dentist was asking me about this experience, and I said, "I'm not afraid to die." I wasn't afraid. Probably because I've been through the anesthesia so many times, it's like, I'll just go to sleep, right? I just became used to that. But she said, "Oh, so you have no regrets." And I was like, "No, I got lots of regrets. I was so glad that I felt that way, you know, that death wasn't this horribly terrifying thing for me. So, and you know who really helps with that is I had wonderful doctors and nurses. And so that's love keeping you alive. And if you were to die, they're there for you too. So,
really quick, I love, I have chronic pain every once in a while. I have back injury that comes up. And it's incredible how it brings out the best in others around you and reminds you what's important.
So I have, excuse me, two things. It is kind of wild how, I mean, it makes sense as well too, just how individualized the feeling of death is. Even with like young kids, like both of our sons see it completely different. Like our oldest, Harry, he's very like analytical, like, okay, this is how a person dies and this is what happens. Like we were kind of describing Day of the Dead to him because we were at Zubu and there was just a lot of themed it as the Day of the Dead, and we were explaining it to him. He's like, okay, yep, that makes sense, sure. And then our youngest is very emotional, like very emotional when it comes to death. Like we were watching a YouTube video about about like this person who sets up dominoes, and she did like a mural of her dog. And at the end, we didn't know, but the dog had passed. 2 hours later, we were still talking about Penny the dog and how Penny died and how Penny was the best dog ever and how he loved Penny. We didn't know about Penny. It was a 2-minute video. And, but it's just kind of wild how different their personalities are about that and how we have to navigate through that and how just even with us, how we are kind of different on how death is and how spirits and everything like that as well. And when I was younger, I was so afraid of dying. I was so afraid of like just everything, like anything to do with death, like graveyards. Like my aunt was a, would go and have like graveyard parties, like type thing. It was, yeah. But now that I'm older and I'm a nurse, like working in an assisted living, like it's just kind of wild. See, like I've called time of deaths before, and like I've kind of acted like hospice nurses, and like I've helped wash my patients after they've died, and like just the care and like everything that has to do with afterwards. It's like you treat them as if they were still living, and you treat them with kindness, and you still treat, it's like there's, yeah, with respect, and there's, it's like another, it's just another crazy feeling. And like I loved doing it because it's like I wanted to keep the respect going after they passed, and it's like I'm not afraid of any of it anymore after those experiences.